I'm about to say is already on the website of arena.org.au. I'll begin with the politics of this pact, known as AUKUS. The Prime Minister announced it as a forever partnership. He used that phrase 10 times in the one press conference. The announcement has had an effect at the political level. An opinion poll soon after found that 57% of the public approve of the pact. 90% of Liberal National Party voters approve, but Labour voters are split. 53% disapprove, 47% approve, which means that the government now has a national security wedge against the opposition. And the looming election will not just be about the response to the pandemic or the bushfires, but about which side can be trusted on national security. Public support for the pact shouldn't come as any surprise, because opinion polls have long shown strong support for the alliance with the United States. And these opinion polls cannot be dismissed as aberrations. If there is to be a credible anti-war movement, it has to be based on what the public regards as reasonable. To that end, I want to say that submarines, conventional submarines, constitute a rare and vital capability for a maritime nation like Australia. They raise the costs for any adversary contemplating hostile action. Anti-submarine warfare, at which Australia is also adept, requires costly cutting-edge capabilities and is one of the most complex warfare disciplines to master. Submarines are expensive, but the cost to an adversary of countering them is much more expensive. Submarines give Australia a strategic weight that no other Defence Force asset or combination of assets has. If we are to call for an independent Australian foreign policy and a military that is armed but neutral, that focuses on defence, not offence, then that military and those calls must presume possession of capabilities such as submarine warfare and anti-submarine warfare. The capabilities cannot be turned on quickly. They require years of investment in personnel and equipment. And so for that reason, even if down the road it is possible to adopt a policy of armed independence, submarines and anti-submarine warfare assets will be a critical part of it. But I want to distinguish conventional submarines, which are relevant for the defense of Australia, from nuclear-powered submarines, which are not. Nuclear-powered submarines give you a range and a submersion and a speed, which allows them to operate far from home, in particular in our context, in the waters of the South China Sea. And some of the submarines that are being discussed, the Virginia-class submarine, for example, have at least 35 Tomahawk missile firing points in the midsection. They allow you to overwhelm an enemy's land defenses. So these submarines, if we're getting Virginia class, are not submarines to collect intelligence. They are not to hunt other submarines or to destroy enemy shipping. They are there to attack another country's coastal defenses. They are offensive. What exactly is the purpose of all this, however? And here I want to draw your attention to a TV show, a comedy called Utopia. In this show, there is a satirical point about defense policy saying, well, we are defending our trade from China, but China is a major trading partner. And so how can we be protecting our trade with China from China? The whole thing is absurd. Well, that clip has been widely circulated and perhaps even funny, but it's utterly misinformed. Australian strategic planners already know that it's absurd to protect trade with China from China. That's not what they're trying to do. In the real world, what they are trying to do is insist that military and intelligence activities can be conducted in another country's exclusive economic zone. Exclusive economic zones were established in the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea in 1982. The United States is the only maritime power not to ratify the Law of the Sea Convention, but it does act in accordance with it anyway. It refers to the exclusive economic zones refer to waters that extend 200 nautical miles from a country's shore. The United States says that it has the right to conduct military and intelligence collection activities within any country's exclusive economic zone and can do so as close as 12 nautical miles from the coast. And it also accepts the right of other countries to do this inside its own exclusive economic zone. During the Cold War, the United States did not interfere with Soviet ships, bombers, or surveillance aircraft that came in close to its airspace. China says that it respects freedom of navigation, but it doesn't respect the right of foreign governments to conduct military and intelligence collecting activities. So this is the key question. Does a country have the right to conduct military activities in another country's exclusive economic zone? In fact, if you look at Indonesia, the Philippines, and India, consider their geographies, their shape, and where they are in relation to the ocean, they all agree with China's version, China's concept of the EEZ. Very recently, in April this year, India protested strongly when the United States conducted its own freedom of navigation operations inside India's exclusive economic zone. Article 301 of the Law of the Sea Convention is called Peaceful Use of the Sea, and it states that the threat or use of force cannot be used inconsistent with the principles of international law in the United Nations Charter. The United States knows that if China's concept of exclusive economic zone rights, namely no foreign military activities in its zone, if that concept were to be widely accepted around the world, the United States would not just lose the ability to project force in China, near China, it would lose the ability to project force in the Middle East, in the Persian Gulf, in the Red Sea. And that would mean that we'd have to conduct operations from 200 miles offshore. That reduces the power and the reach of US intimidatory force. That is why the tensions in the South China Sea over the exclusive economic zone are going on. It has nothing to do with freedom of navigation. It is about whether military activities can be conducted near another country's shore. This is surely a situation that calls for international diplomacy rather than threats of force, the deployment of armadas and so on into another country's zone. This question is important and must be asked not only inside Parliament, but on the streets. What is the purpose of these freedom of navigation operations? Are we doing it in order to protect shipping? And the answer to that is no. Or are we doing it to protect the United States' ability to project force anywhere around the world? 30% of the world's oceans are actually exclusive economic zones of other countries. That is what is at stake here. There are other aspects about the deal, and that is that the policy planners in Australia know that it is a dangerous situation. That is not their concern. They already know that this is going to be dangerous. Their biggest concern is that some other country in the region might be more relevant and more effective and more reliable for the United States, and the United States would choose it over Australia. Speaking truth to power, to tell the people in power that this is what you're doing is dangerous, is useless. They already know this. Policy planners do not need a lesson in that. What they have to be forced to answer, however, is, are we in fact protecting the United States' ability to project power globally, rather than shipping or the defense of Australia? Thank you very much.